Parenting doesn't come with a manual, and when your child learns differently, there's no one size fits all. Here, we think out the box. We celebrate every unique mind, every different path, and every win, big or small. Welcome to Out the Box, where kids and parents grow together.
Good morning, and welcome to Out the Box on 101.9 High FM. For minds that don't fit the mold, but hearts that keep striving. I'm Simone, mom, teacher, and literacy and dyslexia therapist. Today we are speaking about something that can completely change the trajectory of a child's life. It's always a difficult word for me to say. We're speaking about early intervention because sometimes parents just know. They notice that something feels different. Either it's a delay, or it's a struggle, or it's a milestone that your child hasn't quite reached. And then come the questions that are so daunting. Do I wait? Am I overreacting? Will they grow out of it? Who do I even ask? And where do I begin? But what if support given early could change everything? Joining me today to address these daunting and overwhelming questions are two incredible speech therapists and co-heads of the Children's Communication Center, Nikki Chesler and Lindsay Siegel. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Simone. Thank you for having us.
Nikki and I have a very long history, and we go back all the way to my first child, and she treated two of my children. And all I can say is that she was the most thorough, supportive and fantastic therapist that any parent could ask for.
Thank you, Simone.
So let's start right at the beginning. I want to talk about what early intervention really is. And we're not speaking about early intervention from grade one. We are actually addressing early intervention at the age from 3 to 6 or even a little bit older. Nicole, let's start at the beginning. We hear the phrase early intervention all the time, at schools, at our pediatricians, in WhatsApp groups between worried parents. Mm. Can you give us the true definition of early intervention?
So it's really a term that's used to describe services and supports that are available to babies, young children, toddlers that are presenting with developmental delays or disabilities. It's also support for the parents. And so essentially, it's the therapies that are available, the treatment that's available from early on. What we've seen is even in neonatal ICUs, there's often now a speech therapist, a physiotherapist, who will help position the child. The speech therapist will help with feeding. And those children are really getting intervention from the beginning, sometimes preventative. It doesn't necessarily mean they will have an issue long term. And it's really, when we talk about a developmental delay, it's not speaking about where your child's slightly behind. So, for example, children join words at 18 months where they'll put two words together, like look there, up that. And if your child starts at 19 months, that's not what we're talking about with a developmental delay. It's a delay where the child is constantly lagging behind in gaining a specific milestone.
And can that be, you know, in one specific area, or can that include other areas as well?
So it can be one area. It could be a specific speech and language delay, but it can be in other areas. It could be gross motor development. So when your child starts to sit, crawl, walk, how stable they are, their core muscles, can be in fine motor perceptual development. So sometimes it's in one area, and sometimes you might get a delay across the board.
You know, sometimes our parents are faced with this unsettling and confronting and confusing terminology like diagnosis or label, or your child is different. That's very difficult for parents to accept. And when we look at parents, we say that we don't always understand what is developing in the brain. Why is early intervention so impactful neurologically? I think we look at a lot of the occupational therapy stuff and the gross motor stuff as well, but specifically in your area, what early intervention is impactful on, you know, the neurologically development?
Mm-hmm. So that's a really good question. So during the first 6 years of a child's life, the brain is the most adaptable to change, at which time new neural pathways can be laid down, and over time they become increasingly difficult to change. Therefore, the earlier intervention is more likely to be successful than later intervention. Research has shown that a baby is born with more than 85 billion neurons in its brain, and neurons and synapses grow exponentially in the first years of life, even before a baby can walk and talk. And between birth and about 3 years of age, the number of synapses, which are the connections between the neurons within the brain, increase considerably. What happens is, as an infant experiences something or learns something for the first time, a strong neural connection is made. And if this experience is repeated, the connection is reactivated and becomes even, it becomes strengthened over time.
Lindsay, can you just go back a step and,
yes,
you know, the terminology a lot of the parents want you to
explain
the terminology, like what are the neurons, what are the synapses, wiring in the brain.
Yes. So the way the brain is wired is through nerve cells, which are referred to as neurons. And when we talk about synapses, that is the connection between neurons. We have various nerve cells within the body, and they need to communicate from one nerve cell to the next. And that's what we're referring to by synapses. So when an infant or a child is experiencing something, one nerve cell might be stimulated, and it will then stimulate the next neuron. And those connections and those pathways will be strengthened over time. The more a child is exposed to the same experience or the same activity, for example, those things will strengthen those connections between those neurons.
So from what I understand is that we are born with the ability to have speech. Is that correct? As opposed to reading, where we're not born, it's not in the brain.
Yeah, we are born with that.
So how do you know, when you're talking about the neurons that fire together and wire together, you know, Nikki mentioned that and I just loved that quote. How do you know that it is developmental or possibly something else?
So I think that then is a process of elimination. I think if a child's showing a delay and you're not sure what the cause is, I think that's almost the first part of the investigation, is to actually understand why the child is presenting like that. And I think that's often where a doctor will come into the picture as part of the child's team, whether it's a developmental doctor or pediatric neurologist, where they'll run possibly not on every child who presents with a speech problem, but looking for a specific cause. They might want to do an MRI, they might want to do an EEG to see brain structure, an EEG to see if there's any epilepsy, and kind of tie that all together.
And of course, like, that goes back to what you were saying, Nikki, about the early intervention being as young as from birth.
Absolutely.
You know, what type of birth, you know, infarctions can happen, you know, to cause a delay in development?
So sometimes there's no actual cause. Sometimes we do lots and lots of investigations on children and we don't come up with an answer. In other instances, there might have been a lack of oxygen or something that happened during the pregnancy. Some children have strokes in utero while they're pregnant, which would affect their speech and language once they're born. Sometimes there's a lack of oxygen before birth, during birth, after birth, which might give you something like cerebral palsy or specific delays. And then also a lot of premature babies are more at risk.
Yes.
So sometimes we can find a specific cause. And often we can't.
And just to add maybe a possible genetic component as well.
So, you know, what I always think about when it comes to parents with young babies is that, you have to go through the milestones unless you specifically have diagnosed, for instance, a cerebral palsy.
Yes.
Or, you know, a trauma that has happened during the birth. It's that waiting for those milestones to come, which is so stressful and overwhelming for parents.
And anxiety provoking. I think waiting to see, will my child reach that milestone? And then the questions come in, well, why haven't they met the milestones?
Right, yes. Right. What does the research actually tell us about early intervention outcomes?
So there has been quite a lot of research available on early intervention. A rigorous long-term research study conducted by the Center for the Developing Child at Harvard University showed quite interesting outcomes, evidence-based outcomes regarding this. So the first thing that they found was that 1 in 3 infants and toddlers who received early intervention services did not later present with a disability or require special education. They also found that children who received early intervention services achieved better outcomes in various areas, including cognitive, language, and motor development. Also, what they found was that early intervention has been shown to enhance social-emotional skills, promote school readiness, and also strengthen family relationships, which contribute to a child's mental health as well as overall success in adulthood. Also, the early intervention can be more effective and less costly when it's provided earlier in life rather than later. And also, what they found was that early intervention not only impacts the child, but also empowers the family through processes like education, coaching, and guiding them in terms of resources that can help them better understand their child's needs and abilities.
And Lindsay, I really appreciate you raising that because, you know, as a mom with a child who has difficulties, I really do understand how the family is affected by a child with difficulties. And when you speak about the, you know, the empowerment and the education and coaching for parents, I think you are dealing with something that often lacks.
And I think it's often bigger than the child. Like you're saying, it impacts the whole family. It impacts the siblings who maybe have to conform with the specific child's needs, or maybe the child gets less attention because all the focus is on the child that needs it the most.
Correct, because it does take a lot out of you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're putting in so much energy that you turn around and you think, gosh, now I need to cope with this or with that. Mm. That really is a juggling act. Mm. If we go further and we ask ourselves, why doesn't every child benefit from early intervention at the right time?
Yeah, so I think every child benefits from early intervention, but it's not always at the right time. I think in South Africa, it's quite complex. We've got a private healthcare system, a public healthcare system. There are wonderful therapists in the public healthcare system. There are wonderful neurodevelopmental clinics. They're all different. Yeah, there's lots of resources. But I think they're so overwhelmed with the high volume of patients that a child, for example, might get therapy once a month rather than weekly.
We're going to read a bit of advertising for everybody out there. You're listening to Simone on Out the Box, and we're talking about early intervention.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This is Simone, and you're listening to Out the Box on 101.9 Chai FM. Today, we're shedding light on early intervention with speech therapists Nikki Chesler and Lindsay Siegel from the Children's Communication Center. Now we're moving on to when should parents be concerned? At what point do they need to say, okay, something is different? Why doesn't every child benefit from the early intervention at the right time, which is what we were talking about? Nikki, would you like to continue?
Yes, thank you. So we were saying sometimes it's a lack of resources, but also often parents are given advice by friends or other people, and they'll be told things like, don't worry if your child's not speaking. Einstein spoke at four. But most of our children are not going to be Einstein.
Correct.
Or they're given advice, it's fine, it's a boy. Boys develop slower in speech and language than girls, which research has shown. But when they say they develop slower, it's by a few months. It's not a significant delay. So I think sometimes those things delay a diagnosis or delay parents seeking intervention. I also think once parents know that they need to do something, it's very overwhelming. It's anxiety provoking. They maybe don't know where to go, what to do, and how to actually navigate the way forward. And it's a difficult journey for parents. So I think at times that might also delay them getting into action. And once they know something needs to be done, it might take them time to process and figure out what the best direction for them is.
It sort of reminds me of when you write an exam, and I always tell my boys, don't hang around after school and do a post-mortem on the exam. And the same for parents is that everybody wants to give you advice, but trust your gut.
Absolutely. Mm.
And what I always say is do not wait and see. Because that prevents early intervention. And the whole point of getting our children to develop to their potential is the early intervention.
Absolutely.
How can parents tell the difference between normal developmental variations and a possible developmental delay?
I think this is a very important question for parents to know. So Nikki's touched on it already. Just, you know, a normal, there is a normal range in terms of how speech and language skills, gross motor skills, fine motor skills, for example, there's a range during which those skills develop. Typical development, you might have a 1 month, 2 month delay in those skills. And that's why there's a range. But a developmental delay or a disorder is when there is a significant lag in those skills where a child is constantly struggling to catch up with their peers. And it is particularly difficult for parents, especially those that only have one child, that don't have other children to compare their child to know what is typical development and what isn't typical development. There are quite a lot of resources available on the internet regarding milestone development, ranging from speech and language developmental milestones, gross motor developmental milestones, and fine motor skills. Also regarding listening skills, play skills, and cognitive development. But our recommendation would really be to trust your child's play school or nursery school teacher if they mention that your child might have a possible delay or maybe they need to be assessed by a specific therapist. The teachers see your child in relation to children of a similar age, so they would be able to pick up quite easily if there is a delay or, you know, difficulty in a particular area. And just to know that teachers do have your child's best interests at heart and would make recommendations with that in mind. And also as a parent, I think it's important also to trust your gut. If you are concerned, if you have that feeling in your gut that there's something wrong, that there might be a difficulty, there's so many places to turn. Ask your doctor, your pediatrician. When you take a child to the baby clinic for vaccinations, ask, you know, have a check-in with the nurse, your child's teacher, or if you have a therapist that you're familiar with, to get their input as well. And just, you know, based on the evidence that we have chatted about, regarding early intervention, we would strongly recommend taking a more proactive approach rather, you know, err on the side of caution than, you know, using a wait-and-see approach.
Always, always be proactive about it because, as you say, the earlier the intervention, the better the potential of the child is reached.
Yes.
What kinds of areas are addressed through early intervention in your communication center? Is it holistic? What types of therapists are available to parents? Or is it going, which frustrated me a lot, And had I known about the communication centre, I wasn't living in South Africa at the time, but we came back. Despite the fact that I had the incredible therapist that I had, doing everything on site within the day of, you know, a child's day at school is so much less stressful for parents, and we're giving children time to play. Whereas instead of running, you know, to this therapy and that therapy and the next therapy, our children miss out on being able to play.
Absolutely. And I think very much the foundation of our school is that there's a very, very strong multidisciplinary team. Mm. So children can have various therapies, which Lindsay will talk about. Mm. And they're all integrated then into the classroom, into the school day. So when it's time to fetch, you'll fetch a very tired child who's had a very busy day, but they can go home and play.
Right. Mm. Lindsay, tell us about the types of areas that the school tries to deal with in terms of early intervention, like, for example, those gross motor delays. Who deals with that? The fine motor delays, the hearing concerns. Tell us how you plan that into your school day.
Okay, so just in terms of the way that we run at the centre, we do have quite an extensive therapy team. We have seven speech therapists, including the two of us, as well as three occupational therapists who are in sensory integration trained, one of whom is also trained in neurodevelopmental therapy. At our school, we also have two physiotherapists who are also trained in neurodevelopmental therapy, one of which is also trained in maze therapy.
Can you just briefly tell us what does it mean when someone is trained in neurodevelopmental therapy? And then I missed...
Maze
so
therapy.
It's different ways of assessing and treating the child, but it's all postgraduate specialized courses. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our therapists have done their degree and then they've gone on to do either a master's or do specialized courses in areas that are of particular interest to them.
So we are but speaking about highly trained.
All our therapists are highly trained, highly qualified. We also do lots of in-service training at the school. We get a lot of external speakers that will come in, speak to our therapists, our teachers, our assistants about their areas of expertise.
So you really are dealing with a multidisciplinary...
Yes.
Can you just pronounce that?
Multidisciplinary team,
yeah.
Yes.
A multidisciplinary assessment and team and, you know, looking for that holistic support.
I think just on that point, we meet often to conference the children where everyone gives their input. So the teacher will know what the OT's work, the occupational therapist is working on, what the speech therapist is working on, what the physiotherapist is working on, so that it's all integrated throughout the school day.
And just on that note as well, I mean, we're very privileged to have a music therapist that works at our school as well, as well as an ENT who comes in every couple of weeks just to have a look in the children's ears in the instance that they may have a middle ear infection or some wax that needs to be removed.
And in terms of that, I think parents, it's not always a developmental delay, but sometimes it is an ear, a physiological ear problem that the child has.
And you've raised a good point, and I think that it's really important for children's hearing to be assessed anyway, but in our context even more so, where we do have children who are presenting with significant speech, language and or communication difficulties, it's really important to rule out that there's no co-occurring hearing difficulties that may be further negatively impacting on these skills. So we also do our speech therapists, who are also duly qualified as audiologists, also conduct annual audiological testing on all the children at the centre as well.
And this all happens on site.
Yes.
Making it so much manageable for the parents and for the children.
And I think just on the point of hearing, it also goes back to that early intervention, things like newborn hearing screenings, whether they're done while the child's in hospital or afterwards, will also obviously help the child long term.
Absolutely. Can early intervention cure a delay?
So, like that study that Lindsay mentioned, for some children, yes, the child may then not need specialized education, may not need ongoing therapies. For a lot of children, and depending obviously on the extent of the delay, the reason for the problem, the cause of it, it will help all children reach their potential quicker. It'll help them reach their milestones, even if it doesn't as per se cure what they're presenting with.
Right. And that's something that we really need to look at, because we want to give them the best opportunity to fulfill their potential. Children don't all develop in the same way. And maybe the real question is, will they catch up? But rather, what support do they need to thrive? So we go into school and sometimes it takes time for parents to see a difference. You know, as therapists, as people working with the children, and as you said, Lindsay, working with similar types of difficulties, you can see the improvements far easier than a parent might at home. How would you manage that question of a parent coming and saying, you know, I'm not seeing that much progression? Do you have parent support groups or parent counseling that will explain the whole process to them?
So it is a really hard journey for parents, and we are very privileged to have a social worker that does consult at the Children's Communication Centre, specifically for parents that are finding the journey difficult and need that emotional support. So that is definitely something that's...
And I think we also do days, like we just did a paddle fundraiser where a lot of the parents came and they could meet each other and interact. And we do a family picnic every year where all the families come and they have a lot of that type of interaction as well.
Which is very supportive. It's that like for like, but different.
Yes.
But there's that support.
Yes. And I think just on what you were saying, in our school, the one thing that's very different is our whole school has one-way mirrors. So all our classrooms, all our therapy rooms. So we try to get parents to come observe, watch their children in the classroom, watch their child in therapy. And in that way, we can also see where the parent's at. They can know what we're working on. We know what support they need going forward.
That's truly unbelievable. I think that, you know, would be so healthy for parents to be able to see what your child is doing during their school day. Instead of when the child comes home, tired, exhausted, they're not going to show you what they've learned. Mm. They just, you know, either want to go have a nap or go outside and play. So, wow, those mirrors are really, really powerful. When does a child need a more specialized nursery school environment?
So I think if some schools might call the family in and say, we can't give your child enough support. And I think just for parents to know, it's not that the child doesn't want your child in the school. They really want what's best for your child. I think when your therapy team is seeing different delays and they don't feel a mainstream school can give sufficient input, I also think when the child's challenges are not understood, so being put in an environment where your expectations and the input that you're getting is way above the child's ability, you're going to start seeing behaviors from the child. Mm. The child will start maybe being quieter, maybe refusing to go to school, maybe throwing tantrums, and just really affecting their self-confidence.
And I mean, we always speak about look behind the behavior. Mm. Don't just look at the behavior.
Yeah.
It's not stop shouting or, you know, you are going to school. There's no reason why you can't. It's looking why that behavior is presenting.
And that behavior often expresses something. So you might see that in a child if they're not in the correct environment. We also find environment is everything. If a child is put in an environment where they're going to achieve success, where a task is going to be just out of their reach, but with help, they can actually achieve it. You're going to see a much happier child as well.
They flourish. They really do flourish.
And I think just on that point, you know, if you are looking for a different environment from the school your child's in, you need to be guided by teachers, by your therapists, and honestly by your gut. And what you as a parent feel is the right place for your child and for your family. So I always say to parents, make an informed decision. Go see all the schools that you've been given on your list and Absolutely. Then decide what's best.
Absolutely. You know, expectations often exceed the ability of children. And when they are struggling to reach those milestones, the delays just get bigger and bigger and the gap widens. So that early intervention, that early scaffolding, really, I can't say more to how important it is. How does the communication center, what do they offer that is different from a mainstream nursery school? Like in terms of your class size, your ratio, the type of support which we have been speaking about, you know, the curriculum, how is that different from a mainstream nursery school?
Okay, so we do have small class sizes. We have 7 classes in total, and we take up to 8 to 10 children in each of the classes. So there's quite a high teacher to child ratio, which really helps the children get that individualized attention that they need. If there needs to be hand over hand modeling during certain activities, the teachers.
you saw my eyes get bigger and the smile on my face, Lindsay. You know, I love that hand over hand support. Mm. It's the adult physically guiding the child's hands or body through an activity and then helping them learn that movement, action, or skill. That's how I learned to knit. I'm left-handed. There were very few left-handed knitters. But a friend of my mom's was left-handed, and she actually taught me how to knit by moving my hands. Yes. And that's how I learned. And I can really appreciate this hand-over-hand support.
And I think also in a smaller school or in a specialized school, there's the capacity to do that.
Yeah.
Because you've got a teacher and an assistant and a small class, if one child in the class is needing that, we're able to provide it.
Right. I'm just going to read a little ad for everybody, and then we're going to come back to the communication center. We want to hear from you. Chai FM is updating our Voices of Chai, and we need your voice to do it. Send us a voice note, 30 seconds or less, and tell us why you're part of the Chai FM community. What keeps you listening? What does the station mean to you? Send your voice note to 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. We cannot wait to hear from you.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're back on Out the Box with Simone Herring and our guests today, Lindsay and Nikki from the Communication Center. I've also invited a special guest in today. His name is Dylan Berger, and he is blessed, or should I say that his child is blessed to be at the Communication Center. Welcome, Dylan.
Thank you, guys. Great to be in studio.
So we've been speaking about all the amazing therapies and activities that your child is being supported in. I want to know from you when was the first time that you noticed that your child was different?
So it's a good question. You know, I don't think that you can pinpoint an exact moment where you pick up something that is not quite right. But, you know, naturally as parents, you compare your child to other kids' children. And the nice thing was, you know, when you have a child in 2022, it was kind of during that COVID baby boom where a lot of people are having children. And you start to compare and you see, you know, kids who are born at a similar time and they're talking and they're doing certain things. You're like, you know, and the nice thing also is that we have an older daughter who you kind of use her as the template. But truth be told, boys and girls are very different. And you keep telling yourself no, but you know, girls talk quick earlier than boys, and you know, boys are zulics and boys are all over the place. And you keep reverting back to those kind of narratives about what boys are like and what they, you know, what the how they behave, and then you start thinking to yourself, okay, but you know, we need to see some progress here. You know, there's some things are taking a bit too long. And then, you know, then you start talking to people and people start giving suggestions. And, you know, there's a few, you know, the first touch point I know was to see the pediatrician. And the pediatrician said, okay, well, you know, we need to first test your hearing, his hearing, to see, because he wasn't responding to his name. So then I remember he went for a hearing test, which was quite the experience, but it proved that his hearing was fine and that, okay, cool, you can tick that off. And there's obviously there are checklists to go through to make sure, okay, cool, that something isn't quite right and we do need to intervene. But I do think that it's quite important to go through those checklists and not just assume the worst or just, you know, go, you know, straight to, you know, knocking on our guest door here. But I think there are some good places to go to first.
Nikki, would you like to just speak to what Dylan was saying?
Absolutely. I think you're 100% right. I think you've got to rule out if there's any etiology that needs to be dealt with. Like, is it a hearing difficulty? Is it from something else? And kind of go through those stages till you realize that something else needs to be done. And I think we were talking about just now exactly what you said, like boys speak later, those kind of narratives.
I also got a lot because my son didn't walk until he was, Nikki, he was about two.
Yeah.
And I got, oh no, boys are slower and don't worry and this and that. And in fact, you know, that early intervention really helped him to develop into a strong young man. And I'm ever so grateful for that team. Dylan, what type of difference has the center made for your child?
Oh, look, I think, you know, the first things first is that you're in a community with like-minded people. You're all going on the same journey. Not on the same journey, but all going on a very similar journey as to the other parents. So I think just being in that kind of environment helps, that, you know, you're all in this together and that, you know, you all got kids who are on a certain journey. So it helps to be in the right place. What also helps is that, you know, everything's under the same roof. So his other, you know, his speech therapy, his OT is all there as well, which helps because, you know, keeps him there and keeps him engaged the whole day. And just in terms of, you know, it's an environment where it's catered to the child's needs. And I know, like, I mean, for any parent, I mean, regardless of where what school your kid's at, if your child's running into school every morning and is so excited to get there, something's going right. You know,
you know he's in the right place.
You're doing something right. And thank God. I mean, you know, we sometimes threaten that we're not going to take him to school. He's being a naughty boy. So I think, you know, my wife and I realize that we're at the right place, we're doing the right thing, that he's so happy to be there. And you know, look, we've got to understand, you know, we all got to be patient in this process. You know, it's a journey. You know, there's no instant results. There's no instant, you don't see the signs straight away. But there are, like, you know, we have, thank God, seen some amazing improvements. It's been just over a year. It started April last year. And I think, you know, improvements come, like, sometimes you see a lot happen in a short period of time and you don't see so much happen in a longer period of time.
Which Dylan, I think is exactly, children learn in spurts and they see lots of change and then they almost need to consolidate what they've learned before going on to the next stage.
And for me, Dylan, you sound like a parent who is really taking responsibility and doing the best that you and your wife can for your child. And that's a huge thing because it's quite difficult for parents to come to terms with my child is different in a certain area.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we're lucky to be in the era that we're in, that, you know, I think, you know, decades ago, it was a bit of a taboo. But now people, you know, you feel people are quite accepting, weirdly. Like, you know, you go out for meals, you go out for play dates, and people aren't saying, like, no, don't bring your son with. Like, no one's ever said that. You know, even though he's going to be crazy and he's going to be all over the place, people actually, like, are quite open-minded and actually really accepting. And
I think that's because parents speak out. And
correct.
I was saying to Nikki, that's why I started this Out the Box show, so that parents would have a place where they can speak out, and that educates other people.
Spot on.
I think if you open about your child and their difficulties, it shows that you've accepted your child and their difficulties, which helps other people as well.
Exactly.
Accept your child.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, I mean, people ask often, like, what school are your kids at? So, you know, I tell what school my daughter's at, and you say, what school your son's at? I say, he's at the communication center. And people aren't going, oh my gosh, you know, why? You know, what's wrong? You know, people are like, oh, that's amazing. You do. Yeah, I'm sure it's helping him a lot. And you know, well done for putting him in at such an early stage. You know, I think the people's responses have been so like, wow, like, look at you guys. You know, you're doing something really, which is, you know, I'm sure there's many kids who, you know, a lot of people actually come, I'm not speaking out of line here, but they say they wish they had sent their kids, you know, earlier 100%. On. You know, they've got kids now in their teens and even older than that. And they said, oh, I wish we had done that when our child was 3, 4, 5 years old. So,
and I found that even parents who don't have children with barriers would say to me, gosh, you're so lucky that your child goes to Bella Vista, because it's that individualized, hands-on, multidisciplinary and multisensory way of teaching. Mm. And I now look back and I think I am so grateful for what Bella Vista did for my children. And just going back to that, Nikki, in terms of your children ending in the communication center, where do they go from there?
So every year we do a full assessment. So the teacher does an assessment, the OT, physio, speech, depending on what the child's in. We then meet with the parents. We go through everything. When our children get to the last year with us, we like them to have an assessment by an educational psychologist external to the center. We then sit with that information and the parents and look at what the best options are going forward.
Right.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
So just going back to you, Nikki, of what the criteria are for a child to leave your school and then mainstream, you were saying that it's assessments that are not in-house assessments.
So we try to find an educational psychologist that has experience and will understand that child's unique profile. And together with that psychologist and that information, we sit together and work out what the best options will be going forward.
So even before that step, what are your acceptance criteria into the school? How do parents know that this is something that would fit their child?
So we accept children from 3 years up until 6 years. Children who present with various areas that need intervention, for example, if a child's presenting with a speech motor planning difficulty, otherwise known as apraxia of speech, children who have speech that is very difficult to understand due to multiple and or complex phonological processes, for example, if a child has a significant delay in receptive and or expressive language skills, children with hearing impairments, children with auditory processing difficulties, and we also accept children who have been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, but those who demonstrate adequately developed pre-verbal skills and those who can cope within a classroom setting.
Okay, so to all the moms and dads, imagine being a child who keeps failing at things, and that seems easy, keeps failing at tasks that others seem to find easy. Imagine finally entering a room like the communication center and someone now understands how you learn. Someone now knows where to begin and how far it's going to have to go. That scaffolding for the child and for the parents is so essential. Quickly, because this hour always goes so fast, the outreach that you offer.
So we run a program on a Thursday afternoon for 2 hours for children, can come from any other school. Children who can't afford the morning program can come, and that will mirror our school day. It's run by a teacher and a teaching assistant. Lindsay and I also do training at Sparrow FET College for people that are studying to be teaching assistants. They come visit the centre and they see what we do, and we speak to them about speech and language and red flags. And then we do love getting involved in outreach within the wider community. For example, one of our therapists were in contact with the WITS anesthetic department, and we did a huge collection of soft toys and teddy bears that are then cleaned, given to the anesthetics department, and given to each child in public healthcare systems that undergo surgery.
So to all our knitters out there, I always ask, and our crochet teams, please remember that the Communication Centre's outreach program would really benefit from your hand-knitted with love items. Dylan, just quickly, what would you say to a parent listening now, wondering, you know, is this something or should I wait and see?
Yeah, I don't think wait and see. I think, you know, the sooner you do something, the better you feel as a parent, because, you know, if you're just going to sit back and hope things correct themselves, like autocorrect, you know, like, it'll all come together, yeah. It's fine.
Wouldn't that be nice? Like, recalibrate.
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't happen. And be open to the fact to have these compelling conversations with people around you, with your spouse, with your family, because, you know, your child is only going to benefit from it. And just, you know, just be open-minded to be okay with the fact that things might not go as smoothly as you may have hoped, and that you might have one child who's got quite a smooth trajectory in their schooling, and you've got another child who's going to have a bit of a different bumpy road, and that's okay, because you know, that's just how it is, and you don't fight it, because, you know, don't put like a round peg in a square hole. You know, yeah. If that's not where they're meant to be, that's not where they're meant to be, and be okay with it. Just be okay, and you'll be surprised how many people around you are going through something very similar. And I know when we keep talking to people and they say, and you're like, wow, I didn't realize you're also on this journey. Mm. And you just talk to people and you engage people and you actually make new friends. I don't think this was a way to make new friends, but we have.
But you also create an awareness, Dylan, yeah. In, you know, that parents can start thinking about.
Absolutely.
You know, doing that bumpy road in a center like the Communication Center. So I have to wrap up. Nikki, is there any piece of wisdom that you would like to impart to the parents on the show?
So I think, first of all, just to thank you for having us on and for talking to us about early intervention. And then just to the parents, there is support available, there is help available. And once you reach out to whatever professional it is, there will be help for you, and there is a very positive way going forward.
And there's that sigh of relief that there is somebody that can, you know, take some of the worry and say, this is what we're going to
Absolutely.
Do for your child. You've helped us understand that early intervention is giving our children access to communication, to confidence, to belonging, and especially to possibility. And as one of your favorite philosophers said, Jean Piaget, play is the work of childhood. And maybe that's where we really need to understand about early intervention. Children learn through active learning and connection. They learn through movement, through interaction, through feeling safe enough to try. Thank you for joining us and for imparting your really, really incredible insight. I'm going to post the Children's Communication Center's contact, because Craig is telling me to wrap up. So please WhatsApp the 0618951019 so that you can find the Children's Communication Center's details. Thank you for joining us on Out the Box on 101.9 High FM, for minds that don't fit the mold but hearts that keep striving. I leave you with The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston.